if you look around, like, there are different accounts that make it sound like they knew this was a person who was fucking around and they were going to find that person. And then other accounts were like, they thought it was a ghost. But again, like, if you thought it was a ghost, what's a gun going to do for you?
Right. I'm Paige.
And I'm Megan.
And this is Spooky Science Sisters. Hello, you're listening to Spooky Science Sisters, a podcast where we present to you a science-based and probably very giggly discussion on all things strange and unusual.
It's time for another installment of Spooky True Crime Stories, and we have two really good ones for you. We are going to talk about H.H. Holmes, and we are going to talk about the Hammersmith ghost. But first, we're going to do something spooky! Today might be weird. I feel rested.
Wow.
And I know it's shocking. And I had enough time to finish my notes. So that's serious business. All right. So Paige, has anything spooky happened to you since we recorded last?
Yes. Something very spooky happened to me today.
It's very serious. Yes.
I am getting ready to record, and I've gone to the bathroom, and I'm getting my drink, and then I step back in the bathroom for a minute to blow my nose, and I thought I heard the door from the basement open and close. And so I'm standing there in our bathroom, and I'm like waiting to hear something other than just the door, and I don't hear anything. So I'm like, Elliot, is that you? And I hear nothing. Hello? And I hear nothing. And then all of a sudden,
oh no,
running past the bathroom door is a person with a blanket over their head. It's Elliot. And he just goes, ooh, spooky ghost.
What a fucking asshole. Did you tell him that you like didn't have anything spooky to say, and so he decided to do it for you?
Oh no, he had no idea. He I was sitting there laughing, and I don't remember what he said, and I just responded with, "Oh, I'm using that for my something spooky." Yeah,
sorry, Elliot, you're about to become another anecdote on the podcast.
It was pretty funny.
I thought you were going to say that, like, Ari all of a sudden came busting past the door, nope. Which, like, could be scary. Just all of a sudden hear the scrabbling dog feet.
Nope, just Elliot.
Just Elliot being an idiot.
So what about you? Anything spooky happened to you?
I don't have anything super specific. I think we were originally going to record this yesterday, so I had written down that yesterday afternoon I drank enough triple strength Dalgona coffee to like make me never sleep again. I did sleep, but my tummy has felt weird all day. So
I'll say, you said you felt rested, so you must have slept.
I must have like slept good despite the caffeine, but like I think my stomach may never recover.
It's fighting back.
Yeah. Stephen was like, this is equivalent to like five 60 ounces of coffee. He was like, don't drink all that. Why'd you make it so strong? Jesus. And then my other thing was that I'm just very sad that The Last of Us is over, because I don't have anything to look forward to on Sunday nights anymore.
I know, I'm sad too. I might just restart it every Sunday, just watch another episode as if it's still airing.
Just keep recycling, probably for like the next 2 years, because that's how long it's going to take them to make another season.
Or I'll just like every Sunday night for an hour, I'll play the game.
Oh, that's the way to do it. Yeah, do like, yeah, do an hour of Last of Us time.
Yeah.
That's smart. You could do the first game, then you could do the second game.
Heck yeah. And then that would run you up to the next season Or yeah, I was gonna say your clothes.
If the next, yeah, I was gonna say if the next season comes out next year, because my plan is like I was like I'm not waiting to figure out how this story ends up. Like I'm gonna play the next game with like heavy assistance from Steven. Otherwise, no way I'm making it through. But yeah, I'm gonna play the next game. But yeah, if I only did like an hour a week, that's like, yeah, I could probably get pretty close because it's gonna take me a really long time. And I might never be the same emotionally, apparently. So, yay! Looking forward to that.
Woohoo! Talk about something spooky.
I will never recover.
Oh my god, how do we have 10 pages of notes?
That's my something spooky.
How did we do this?
I don't know. Yesterday we had like a page and a quarter, and then apparently we both were like, yeah!
I still feel like I could add 5 pages.
Oh, I was like still going in and like making little changes and stuff. Mine was way longer than I thought it was going to be. So, all right. So today, I feel like, Paige, you got the harder task because you took on H.H. Holmes, which is like an enormous topic.
It's so big. And like there's like literally every point in his life there, like you could do an episode on. There's just so much to talk about. Be prepared for some of this to be like me sort of zooming through because we just don't have the time to talk about it all.
Right, right. Yeah. Like there are entire podcast seasons dedicated to him. There are entire books written about him. Like, it's a whole thing. Yeah. So, yeah. So, we're not going to be able to do, like, the world's deepest dive because that would require, like, an entire season of a podcast. But, yeah, I know there are some key things that you're going to talk about that I'm excited about. I am very sad, though, because, like, I think within the last couple of weeks, the, like, H.H. Holmes' Devil in the White City project got like officially canned. Not a thing anymore.
Yeah. And like, I don't know. Cause it was supposed to be a movie first, right?
Yeah.
And they decided to make it a TV series because the movie wasn't going to work out. And then now they've poo pooed on that too.
Yes. Yeah. It was like supposed to be a movie and Leonardo DiCaprio was involved. And then it got switched to a series at Hulu. And I think, like, Keanu Reeves was tied to it. But, yeah, it, like, officially got, like, the boot. But I guess, like, that, I haven't read the book yet. And it's been, like, on my shelf for, like, a decade now.
So which book? Like, the Devil in the White City book?
Yeah, Devil in the White City.
Okay.
But from what I understand, I think there's, like, aspects. Like, I think it focuses on him. I don't know. I should know more about it. But, like, there are aspects of it, I think, that people are just saying, like, are really difficult to film. So I think that's sort of why it got stalled and then never materialized.
Well, and here's what I am going to say is that, like, I don't know. I like watching true crime stuff. I'm not proud of it. I don't think it's doing great things for the world necessarily, but I do enjoy true crime. But like, I'm not clear that this guy really needs any more time on the big screen or like any more attention focused on him.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, any like film. Yeah, there's been so much. Yeah, there's been so much like documentary stuff done on him that. Like, as fucked up as it sounds, like, yeah, what I would be excited for is, like, that it would be a period piece and you'd get to see, like, old Chicago and there'd be really cool costumes. And it's like, but should I be excited about those things when it's, like, about a prolific murderer?
Right.
Maybe not.
We'll get to the 10 pages of notes eventually, I'm sure, but
Bring up the show. I'm a little sad.
Oh, no. I'm just going to bring something else up is all.
Okay.
You guys haven't started The Devil in Me yet, right?
No, I heard he was a character. I just saw last night that he was a character in that, and I was like, oh, very exciting.
It's like based on him.
Oh, it's like all
the whole,
him.
Yeah, like the whole game is him.
Oh.
Yeah. So,
well,
go play it.
All right. I guess I'm going to get my fix anyway.
Okie dokie. Well, let's do it, I guess, huh?
We're going to do it.
So, which we already just talked about, we are going to start with what I think is probably one of the scarier monsters, if not the scariest monster that we've talked about since we started the show.
At least in reputation.
Yeah, but like generally, I don't know. Like we haven't, I don't think we've talked about many serial killers. So I still think he makes it up there.
People are scarier than monsters. Yeah. People are the real monsters.
Exactly. And he's known as being like America's first serial killer. H.H. Holmes, that's what you guys all know him as, but his real name, the name he was born with is Herman Webster Mudgett. And what are you laughing about?
I'm laughing because he has like a really lame real name. And it's like, I know. You know what? Suck it, man. You just live with that stupid name. Sorry to all the Hermans and Websters who are listening. It's mostly the Mudgett part at the end that does
Yeah,
it.
It's really just the three names all clumped together that makes it sort yeah. of funny.
Like the oldest of old man names.
Yeah. Yeah, poor baby Herman.
No, not poor baby Herman.
So, as we've already sort of alluded to, we're here to tell you that the stories you know about H.H. Holmes are likely very different than what historians think actually occurred. And so, a little bit about his childhood. He was born in 1861 in Gilmanton, New Hampshire. He was an intelligent kid, born into a wealthy family. And there's a lot of information out there about his family being really dysfunctional and that he had an abusive father. There are stories about Mudgett as a child dissecting animals that he found around the house to study their biology. Some people even believe that he may have killed his friend when he was really young. But basically, like, it sort of seems like most of this is just stuff that was sort of filled in after the fact to give yeah. him like the stereotypical serial killer like background or childhood.
Right.
So doesn't really seem to be much evidence of any of this.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that like I had a hard time finding like a clear answer on, and I don't know if you know, Megan, is that it seems like pretty unlikely that he was directly involved in his friend's death, but it does sound like he did lose a friend at a young age and may have even been there when it happened.
Oh. No, I had no idea. I don't know. Okay. I don't know anything. I don't know shit about fuck.
So, like I said, I'm not quite sure if that's true, but if it is, like, I can only imagine the effect that something like that would have on a young kid having to witness a friend dying. So,
yeah.
What we do know about him as a child is that he was interested in medicine and it's something that he wanted to study. My voice is still not fully back, if you can't tell. Sorry, everybody. So yeah, we knew as a child he was interested in medicine. So as a young adult, he ends up enrolling in med school at University of Michigan. And during his time at U of M, there are some stories of him supposedly stealing and mutilating some cadavers and then using them. Some sources say for insurance fraud. I know I've heard in the past that like he was selling them to like other medical schools or like later on in life would sell like skeletons to medical schools for money.
Yeah, I thought he was just either like digging up graves and selling the bodies or selling the skeletons. I hadn't heard that he was like stealing from the university.
Yeah, and I've heard a little bit of all of that. And honestly, of some of the earlier crimes that people think he committed or have like said he's committed, these really wouldn't surprise me so much because a lot of the crimes that he like most definitely committed were financial crimes. So like it wouldn't totally surprise me if he was doing some of this just to make money.
Yeah. I'm trying not to spoil anything because I have so many thoughts later.
Yeah. I'm trying not to say too much yet either.
I mean, people know, but like, yeah. I've, yeah. The like, the sort of like real story aspects. It's like, I know what you're coming to and I'm very excited about it.
So he is a mediocre student in med school. He does end up graduating, and in 1886, he takes a job as a pharmacist in Chicago. And this is where the alias Dr. Henry Howard Holmes, or H.H. Holmes as we know him, is born. So he's living in Chicago now.
Do we know why he changed his name, or was he just like, he didn't like his name, or he knew he was in trouble for something, or?
I could not tell you that. Okay. I mean, so I know that like later on, there is some using of like other names for, right, you know, like finance, for like insurance fraud type, yeah, things. And that could be why, but I don't know that I actually saw that anywhere specific. Gotcha.
Okay.
So those of you who have heard the Holmes stories before are likely familiar with what is called the Murder Castle or the Murder Mansion, the building that he lives in. This building, supposedly based off of the stories we all know or have heard, it supposedly housed Holmes' living quarters, his hotel, and his torture and murder rooms or devices. The stories say that one floor included small, soundproof torture rooms, secret passageways, false walls, secret trapped doors and chutes, maze-like hallways, and in the basement, an operating table, gas chambers, and a crematorium.
Lovely.
Pretty horrifying place, right? Most of the stories that are told are sort of centered around the World's Columbian Exposition, or the World's Fair, in Chicago in 1893, where Holmes opens this murder castle as the World's Fair Hotel, lures people in to stay there, tortures and kills men, women, and children.
And if you go like on any sort of like ghost or spooky tour in Chicago, it's like you always are going to go places where they're like, oh, they say H.H. Holmes hung out here and like picked up his victims.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, so, I mean, that's essentially like this right here is most of, I would say, it's like a really, really brief synopsis of like the stories that we've heard in the past. So yes. I don't know if there's anything you want to add to that, Megan.
Yeah, just that he's like a total monster and he's, you know, built this like very sophisticated place with all these trapdoors and creepy places to kill people. And yeah, that he's apparently charming and smart enough to like get away with killing a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
we know so, better.
But we know some other information.
Wow.
So in 1894, just a year after the World's Fair in Chicago, Holmes is arrested. And what he's arrested for isn't totally clear to me. It sort of depends what source you're looking at. But whatever it was, it seems to have had nothing to do with any sort of suspected homicide. It's either an arson case where he suspected to have committed arson for insurance money, or something about like some horse theft. I'm not quite sure, but he's arrested.
As with anything 130 years old that like has gone through a lot of like sensationalized media versions, it can be difficult to sort out all the fine details.
Exactly. And so the details really of kind of the rest of this story are a little bit all over the place. I've done my best to try to piece together the parts that seem to have some truth behind them. But understand that, like I said, some of it may be not totally 100% accurate.
Yeah. I mean, the important thing here is like, we're trying to tell what's the true version of events versus like what's the sensationalized H.H. Right. Holmes like mythical figure events.
So shortly after he's arrested for this, investigators begin to suspect him of being involved with the murder of an associate of his, Benjamin Peitzel. And Holmes and Peitzel had supposedly made a deal that they would fake Peitzel's death, and Holmes and Peitzel's wife would split the life insurance payout. And so in this agreement that they've made, Holmes was supposed to find a cadaver that they could use to play dead Peitzel. So they would like had a body to use as Benjamin's. But somewhere in their planning, Holmes changes his mind. And I don't know why or what happens, but basically he decides, nope, we're not doing that, and ends up killing Benjamin instead.
Let's actually do a murder.
Like, let's actually just murder him, right? And supposedly he does this by like using some chloroform to knock him out and then sets him on fire.
Jesus Christ.
Which, like, horrible. And if that's not horrible enough, he then goes on to tell Peitzel's wife that they were successful in faking Benjamin's death and that he is safe and in hiding.
Oh, dear.
So now, like, she thinks she's going to get this insurance payout. She thinks her husband is safe. And then he, you know, he's like getting her to trust him with all this. He manipulates her into allowing him to take three of their five children with him. Where are they going? I still don't really know that I have found an answer, though I am assuming he told her that they were going to visit Benjamin. That's just a guess. I'm not really sure that I found information. All I know is that they're going somewhere and Holmes has three of her kids.
Just bad decisions.
Right. Right. And like, I mean, clearly at this point, you know, not trying to blame her at all, because like, she obviously trusted him at least somewhat, and like him and Benjamin had some sort of working relationship. But it's right. Like, this is a man who had just made a plan to fake your husband's death. Like, he's clearly not an honest guy.
Yeah. So, but I mean, I guess if her husband was going along with it, neither is her husband. So I don't know. He had to have been at least convincing enough to make them think that he was safe and that this was a good idea.
Unfortunately, as you can guess, the three children in Holmes' custody did not survive that trip. Ugh. And Holmes is eventually arrested again for the murder of the four of them and does confess to their murders. The bodies of the two girls, Alice and Nellie, were found in the cellar of Holmes' Toronto home. And the boy, Howard, his remains were found in the chimney of a cottage that Holmes had rented. So these are the four murders that he gets arrested for. And they're, I mean, basically, they end up being the reason that he sits in prison. They end up being the reason that he is sentenced to death. Mm-hmm. This is really this is the story.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, ultimately, what he gets caught for is like trying to commit insurance fraud.
Yes.
And that was like basically his whole jam this whole time was like he was collecting insurance money on various people. So
And I do like I wish I would have written this down because I can't remember for sure, but I think there was even like a small bit of time where he was like trying to find a way to collect some sort of money off of these kids too. And like you said, that was his thing. So So when he's arrested, he admits to somewhere between 27 and 100 murders. It seems like based off what I've read that his confession starts at 27 and that he actually gives 27 names, but his story and the number seems to sort of change a couple of times. Mm-hmm. As more people get involved, journalists get involved, the story starts to change and develop. Nowadays, though, you will read that he may have killed as many as 200 people, a number that wasn't suggested by him. It wasn't even suggested for the first time, it seems, until the 1940s.
Of course.
Yeah. The number that like we all hang on to was made up 50 years after his death. And it's really the biggest reason that we are still talking about him in the year 2023.
Yeah.
Now, of the original 27 names that Mudgett gave, which are in articles as like he had said these are the people he had confessed to killing.
Yeah.
Of those 27 names, several of them at that time were verifiably alive.
This guy's full of shit.
So yeah, just like, yeah. He did not kill all of those 27 people.
Yeah. Well, and as to like the 200 and then the number that comes up later, like whether or not that's sensationalized journalism or, which I know you're going to talk more about, but it could also just be like, oh, I had a family member who was missing, like who went missing at the time of the World's Fair. And like at that time, you've got, I mean, like tons of people who are in the city of Chicago and like a lot of immigrants and stuff who'd come into town for this. And so like, I could imagine that like, there were maybe a few more disappearances than normal. And like, they weren't all H.H. Holmes. Like it was other right. people, or it was people like, you know, just skedaddling of their own volition. And like, so I'm sure over time, anybody who had a family member who went missing during that time was like, oh, probably it was Holmes.
Absolutely.
And like that, so that that's like another way that that number gets inflated.
And I'm trying to see if I can find it really fast. So there is an article, and this is jumping ahead a little bit, but that's okay. I don't think it's like totally spoiling anything by any means. most of us know at least part of his story. There is a newspaper article, the Chicago Chronicle. I think it looks like it's a newspaper. Either way, there's an article written the day before his, or the day maybe of his execution. Mm-hmm. And I'm wishing I had saved it. I thought I had, but I can't find it. There's a quote in here from him where he's basically saying that, like, if they are going to blame me. Oh, here it is. I have been accused of killing almost every person who has disappeared during the past 10 years. And I knew they would swallow any sensational story I might write. Of course, there is a good deal on the confession that is not true, but the newspaper wanted a sensation, and that's what they got. And there I got well go. Paid for it. Yeah.
So Holmes got well paid, but like ultimately executed?
Yeah. So actually, and that's what I was. Yeah, I'm not really sure why this was agreed upon. And I think I know the answer. So
okay.
The next thing that I was actually going to talk about actually worked out perfectly is that he is paid some amount of money for his story, for his confession.
Okay.
That amount of money, it looks like it ranges somewhere between $7,500 and $10,000, but I'm not quite sure exactly.
Yeah. Which was like a fuck ton of money at the time.
That is a fuck ton of money, right?
Like, what would that be in today's dollars? Let's do the lower end, $7,500.
Yeah.
Dollars, let's say 1890. Wait, what year was he caught?
1894.
He's caught in 1894? Well, he didn't make it very far.
Yeah.
To today. Oh!
It's probably like so much money.
$7,500 in 1890 is equivalent in purchasing power to about $247,000 today.
Yeah. So he gets paid possibly more than that by the Hearst Corporation, which is the owner of like, well, now anyways, owner of like Cosmopolitan and the True Crime Network and like some pretty big names. So I guess I don't know exactly who they owned at that point, but like, you know, they were selling the story. They wanted a sensational story, like he says.
Right. And I guess like maybe he takes the deal because he figures he could like pay somebody off or something, like, I don't know, to like try and buy his way out of prison or like not get executed. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure there was a little bit of that, but at some point he why can't I think of the word? He was in prison, but he's like appealing his sentence at some point. So like, I kind of wonder if he was just like sure he would eventually get off, and so he took the money. That's the only thing I could imagine.
Yeah. Well, like, of course he thought that he was smart enough to get free eventually.
Sure. Right.
Fuck that guy.
Right. And, like, that's my thing is, like, this man, has a history of committing crimes specifically for money. So it's like by offering him a big sum of money to sell his story, like everybody had to have known that it was not going to be the most truthful confession.
Right. Like, yeah.
He's giving a story that's going to sell. So yes. Basically, I just want to like say that obviously like we are not trying to defend this guy. We think he's like a monster and frankly, I think he's sort of a piece of shit, but but like we just wanted to like set the record straight on like what the story was.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. It's like, it does feel a little bit funny to be like, let's set the record straight. Like this guy didn't kill as many people and like he wasn't. But I think it's just like, I look at it more as like, let's confront the real monster that was here and what he really did rather than this sort of like mythical version of him who's like this sophisticated killer who like got away with hundreds of killings and like had this crazy murder castle. And it's like, no, this guy was like a fucking jackass who committed insurance fraud and like, yes, he killed people and he was a terrible person, but like he's not some like, I don't know, hallowed serial killer who's like so great at what he did and like,
I just don't want people coming away from this thinking that we were like, oh, he did kill 200 people. He only killed four. Like, that's not.
No. I'm not trying to defend what he did or make him seem better than what he was. Because, like, I just think, like, I think it's interesting that, like, people talk about him, like, almost with this, like, reverence for, like, how prolific he was as a killer and, like, how crazy the things that he did were, or, like, at least the version that is popular that people sell. And it's like, no, he was just like a piece of shit. Like, like that's my point here.
Yes. Same.
He wasn't that smart. Like, I don't think he was that smart. Like they say that he was like just an average student in med school and had to like, you know, steal bodies or whatever to make money. And like, I don't think he was all that. He was just some piece of shit dude. So anyway.
Yeah. Now you know.
Now you know. I have a lot of thoughts about this.
Okay. So like we mentioned, there are several crimes that Holmes had been involved with over the years. However, a large majority, like basically all of those crimes were financial crimes. Mm-hmm. There were reports of theft, of insurance fraud. There are some mentions of domestic abuse. And like I couldn't really confirm those, but frankly, it wouldn't really surprise me. So yes, he was a long time criminal, but it is likely that he actually did not kill his first victim until 1891, but like maybe even later than that.
Yeah.
Which means at most, there were only 3 years between his first victim and then his arrest in 1894.
Yeah. Which is like saying something in terms of serial killers or like people who are, for lack of a better word, good at it. Like some people, like even much later when technology and like the sharing of information between police departments and stuff was much better, you know, much, much later, got away with this kind of stuff for a lot longer. Like my dude only got away with this for like 3 years.
Right.
And like, maybe didn't even, So again, he's like become this like mythical figure and we want to talk about how crazy he was. And it's like, but he wasn't though. He was just some piece of shit dude who like wasn't even that good at this.
Exactly. So from the Smithsonian Magazine article, The Enduring Mystery of H.H. Holmes, America's First Serial Killer, by Mylon Solly, she discusses the book The True Story of the Devil in the White City, written by author Adam Seltzer. And in that article, she says, quote, "The facts are these," says Seltzer. "Sensationalized reports suggest that Holmes killed upward of 200 people. Seltzer could only confirm 9 actual victims. Far from being strangers drawn into a house of horrors, the deceased were actually individuals Holmes befriended or romanced before murdering them as part of his money-making schemes." So 9 victims were all that he could confirm. And I have read some articles that suggest that the Peitzel family members are really like the only 4 who have truly been confirmed, mm-hmm. and that the other 5 are just like assumed victims, where they're pretty sure that that they were victims of his.
Gotcha.
So then the murder castle, because this is the other thing that has like this grand, like this reputation of just like you said, being like just this like like super well thought out house or maze of a house that's like literally just built to like for you to get stuck in essentially and then get tortured.
And it's like, I mean, it's like the inspiration for like the American Horror Story Hotel season. And
oh, is it?
Yeah. It took inspiration, yeah, from H.H. Holmes and yeah, his supposed murder hotel.
Okay. So yes, the murder hotel or the murder castle was like really not, it was not a murder house and it wasn't a hotel. Mm-hmm. While there are some confirmed reports of like hidden rooms, those were basically just rooms that Mudgett had walled off because he was trying to hide furnishings or other things that he had stolen from shop owners coming to either collect their money or to repossess their property. So there were hidden rooms, but like not in the way that people think that there were.
Yeah, he was just hiding shit in them that he didn't want to get caught with.
The crematorium and gas chambers that were supposedly in the basement, to my understanding, are just complete fabrications as the more like modern day version of this story started to emerge. From that same Smithsonian article, Solly says, "And while historical and contemporary accounts alike tend to characterize the so-called murder castle as a hotel, its first and second floors actually housed shops and long-term rentals, respectively."
Oh.
When he added a third floor onto his building in 1892, he told people it was going to be a hotel space, but it was never finished or furnished or open to the public, Seltzer added. The whole idea was just a vehicle to swindle suppliers, investors, and insurers.
Yeah, he's just using it as like a front to to like get money out of.
Exactly. But there was like never, it was never used as a hotel. It was never opened as a hotel.
Yeah. He's not like bringing people there as guests, like, oh, got this great place for you to stay. And then
exactly.
Like dropping them down a secret shaft to the basement where they get gassed and then torn apart or whatever.
Right.
My dude was just trying to commit insurance fraud.
Right. So the Peitzel family case, like we mentioned, is ultimately what lands Mudgett in prison for a short time before leading to his public execution. Mudgett is hanged on May 7th, 1896 in front of the Philadelphia County Prison.
Gotcha. So he must have like fled Chicago because he ends up in Philadelphia.
Yeah, yeah, he did. But right before his arrest, he had fled Chicago. Mm-hmm. And so people believed for years that Holmes bribed authorities to let him go and that he had escaped his execution, was actually still alive.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And people felt so strongly about this that in 2017, so 2017, like,
yeah.
6 years ago.
Yeah.
Archaeologists were asked by Holmes' descendants to exhume his remains and confirm his identity, which they did. And they were able to confirm his identity through dental records.
Yeah. And I've heard all sorts of stuff about that, too, where like some people will say like, oh, he didn't actually get executed. He fled to Europe and he became Jack the Ripper. And it's like, no. He
yes.
Didn't.
Yep. Yeah. I have also read the same thing. There are like tons of stories, but
yeah, I didn't know they had actually dug up his body though.
I didn't either.
And confirmed it. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So it is confirmed.
I don't know if awesome is the right word, but it's something.
It's something.
It's interesting.
If you're concerned Well, I mean, obviously he wouldn't still be alive today. But if you were at some point concerned that Holmes was not actually executed and had been floating around and was Jack the Ripper, we're here to tell you that archaeologists have confirmed that that is not true.
Yep, he's very much dead.
Yeah, he's been dead for a long time. So that's kind of the end of his story. Now, the castle or the murder castle, the hotel, whatever you want to call it, was gutted by fire after reports of two men seen entering the building late one night. And it's, I guess, I don't know. I think that was just shortly after his execution or maybe even while he was still in prison.
Gotcha.
But the building stood for a while longer and wasn't finally torn down until 1938. But now it's where the Englewood USPS stands in the Englewood neighborhood in Chicago.
Yep.
So no longer Murder Castle now. It's just the post office.
Yeah. And I'm sure people like to tell ghost stories about the post office.
Yeah. Didn't we hear ghost stories about the post office when we did that tour in Chicago?
I think she said something. I think some people were like, oh, can we go there? And she was like, no, don't go there. It's not in a great part of town. But it's torn down. And I don't know. I think she alluded to there being stories about the post office. But, you know, it's just the usual BS, I guess.
And so one final quote from that Smithsonian article that I think really sums this whole thing up well. Quote, as Frank Burgos of Philly Voice noted in 2017, Holmes was not just a serial killer, but a serial liar eager to encrust his story with legend and lore. While awaiting execution, Holmes penned an autobiography from prison filled with falsehoods, including declarations of innocence and exaggerations. Newspapers operating at the height of yellow journalism latched onto these claims, embellishing Holmes' story and setting the stage for decades of obfuscation.
There you go.
So, yeah, I mean, basically, Holmes definitely still a monster.
Yeah. But not some like legendary killer who,
right,
you know, got away with all these things.
Exactly.
So I think, yeah, I prefer to think of him as just like a sad little man who tried to commit a lot of insurance fraud and thought that he was so great.
That's exactly.
Like, you weren't, though. You were just a loser who got caught and paid the price for it.
Yeah. And that's sort of, kind of my point, I guess, at the beginning of this is that, like, not that I think if the stories we all heard were true that he would deserve fame, because I don't believe that, but like, we've just given this guy so much more attention for things that, like,
yeah, like, he doesn't deserve the fame that he's gotten. Like, he should just, like, that's probably what he would have wanted, is like to be infamous.
Exactly. And it's like, we're giving him what he wanted him, like, mostly for things that aren't true.
So fuck that guy.
Yeah. Fuck that guy. That guy sucks.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
That was great. You approached that exactly how I was dreaming.
Yay! I did it!
Great. Well, that is A.J. Holmes, who was just a sad little loser. Now we are going to talk about the Hammersmith ghost, which I had written this down forever ago and then forgotten why I had written it down and then had to like refresh my memory and take all these notes. And I was like, oh, now I know why I was so excited about this. So this is like a little treat to myself from past me.
Thank you, past Megan.
Thanks, past Megan. Okay, so this story takes place in Hammersmith, a village on the outskirts of London in 1803. So we're like almost 100 years before H.H. Holmes and across the ocean. So that November and December, people in the village started claiming that they had seen a ghost in the area of Black Lion Lane and St. Paul's Churchyard. The ghost would jump out and confront them, and some people were even grabbed or physically attacked. So very scary. The ghost was described as tall and dressed in a white cloak or like something that looked like a burial shroud, essentially, mm-hmm. Or sometimes wrapped in a calf's hide. And some of the stories even said that he had horns or like glowing or glass eyes. So there's a lot going on here, what people are seeing. Okay. Thomas Groom, a servant, described his encounter with the ghost as follows. He says, I was going to the churchyard between 8 and 9 o'clock with my jacket under my arm and my hands in my pocket when some person came from behind a tombstone, which there are 4 square in the yard behind me, and caught me fast by the throat with both hands and held me fast. My fellow servant, who was going on before, hearing me scuffling, asked what was the matter. Then, whatever it was, gave me a twist round and I saw nothing. I gave a bit of a push out with my fist and felt something soft, like a great coat. Ooh. So, yeah, the thing like jumps out from behind a gravestone and grabs this guy around the neck and he shoves back and like feels like what feels like a heavy coat on the person. So, like a little hint that like this is scary, but like why is this ghost wearing a coat?
Right. I was going to ask like, so I have heard this story before, but okay. It was a long time ago and I like don't really remember much of it at all. But why do people think this is a ghost?
Well, we'll get there. I don't really know. I don't think I have a good answer for that because like a lot of these stories sound to me like that is just a person wearing a sheet, like a stereotypical right. ghost
right.
trying to scare people. But I think they were like, I don't know. So there's some fuzziness as to like who thought this was actually a ghost and like who thought this was just a person dressing up like a ghost and fucking with people.
Got it.
And that will sort of like become important later.
Okay.
Yes. Because yeah, some sources did specifically mention that like some people were skeptical about this and some people really did believe it was a ghost. Okay, so sort of another key encounter here, or at least one that was rumored, because you get some shifting details, as you always do, was that a pregnant woman was grabbed by the ghost while walking near the Hammersmith Churchyard or St. Paul's Churchyard. She fainted and had to be taken to a nearby home to recover, although some accounts claim that she died a few days later. There's also stories of an elderly woman who was grabbed by the ghost later dying of shock.
Yikes.
Yeah. And like, here's the thing, like these are not, those encounters are not substantiated. So like, we don't really know. But like, the thing is, at the time, like those stories were being circulated and people thought that the ghost, like at least some people thought the ghost had killed women.
Got it.
So an account of one of these was published in the book Old and New London. It says, one poor woman, while crossing near the churchyard about 10 o'clock at night, beheld something, as she described it, rise from the tombstones. The figure was very tall and very white. She attempted to run, but the supposed ghost soon overtook her, and pressing her in his arms, she fainted, in which situation she remained some hours, till discovered by the neighbors, who kindly led her home, when she took to her bed and died 2 days afterwards. Which, like, I mean, to be fair, person or ghost, like if someone rises up from behind a tombstone and then like gives me some sort of like squeezing hug, like that is going to scare the fuck out right. of me. So here's the thing, like people, regardless of what was really going on here, people started freaking out. And there were villagers who believed that it was the spirit of someone who had committed suicide about a year earlier and was buried in the churchyard, because apparently at the time it was believed that those who had taken their own lives could not be buried on consecrated ground or their souls wouldn't be at rest. So there's like definitely some people that believe that this is really a ghost.
Sure.
But like, yeah, in retrospect, it all sorts of, it sounds a little bit silly because it's like, as far as I can tell, like he didn't, the ghost didn't kill anybody. Like nobody actually died of fright. Like I think those are just exaggerated stories. And like, he's just sort of jumping out and scaring people.
Okay.
And it's, yeah. Okay. So the final encounter of note happened on December 29th when William Girdler, a night watchman, spotted the ghost. And as he chased it off, William witnessed the ghost throw off its white shroud in order to run faster. And it's like, my man, like that's a very obvious sign that you did not see a
ghost.
That
is not a ghost.
You just saw my a man. Dude.
That is not a ghost.
You just saw a dude in a white sheet who was like, oh shit, they're gonna catch me, throws it off and runs for it.
What, you like, we've heard these stories before, right? Like,
yeah.
And I just wonder, like, what do these people think is gonna happen to them? Because they can't possibly think there's a positive outcome. Like, I'm gonna stand around and scare the shit out of people and see how long it takes before somebody beats the shit out of me.
Yeah, so I think I had this later in the notes, but this like very much reminded me of the clown sightings that were happening in, yes, like 2016.
Yes.
Where people were just dressing up as like evil clowns and sort of just staring at people and being weird and hanging out around like schoolyards and stuff like that. And it's like, somebody's gonna get shot. Like,
yeah.
And like, basically that's what happens here. Spoiler alert. But like, I'm shocked that it didn't happen in 2016.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, like, I don't know, like at some point it's like you gotta relax. I also sort of asked myself this whole time, like, if there weren't copycats at play, like that there were multiple people who thought this was hilarious and like were going out dressed, oh, probably, as this. Yeah. So it might have, you know, been multiple people because they thought it was funny. Yeah. So again, this is obviously not a ghost. This is a person in a sheet. But like at this point, you've got 2 months of like people having these like scary encounters. Like whether that's a person or not, like you are not jumping out of a graveyard at me at night and like that's going to take years off of my life. Right. So like people were panicked and they were like hysterical and there was just like, there was no going back. Like people were going to, they were going to do something about this. So a few people in Hammersmith start sending out nightly armed patrols trying to catch the ghost. And I think it's good. Like, they don't just want to catch the ghost. They want to kill the ghost.
I would have, what other reason would they have to be armed?
Well, I mean, I guess like, yeah. Like, what do you think, like this to me, like this has to mean that they knew it wasn't a ghost, right? Because like, why would a ghost care if you had a gun? Why would you
shoot a ghost?
Right. Like, what do you think is going to happen? Nothing. And like, the only explanation I can give is like, if they did think it a ghost, like that because of Thomas Groom's account, the servant who like felt the coat or whatever, that they thought like maybe there's some like corporeal aspect or physical aspect to this that like will be affected by a gun. But it's like, they had to have known. I don't know. And that's the thing. It's like there, if you look around, like there are different accounts that make it sound like they knew this was a person who was fucking around and they were going to find that person. And then other accounts were like, they thought it was a ghost. But again, like if you thought it was a ghost, what's a gun going to do for you?
Right.
That is a dead person. And like a lot of people thought that it was a dead person who had committed suicide by like slitting their own throat. And like, so it's like, well, they've come back to life. Like, again, what is a gunshot going to do? Anyway. Okay. So now we come to the night of January 3rd of 1804. So a few days later, and this like all comes to a head. So a bricklayer named Thomas Millwood had been visiting his parents after work and started walking home around 11 p.m. Importantly, his normal work outfit was white linen trousers and a white waistcoat and an apron. Like a typical like plaster or brickwork, like bricklayer outfit. Uh-huh. I feel like we've all seen them. So as he was walking along Black Lion Lane, he heard a shout. And the shout said, "Damn you. Who are you and what do you want? I'll shoot you if you don't speak." And there are a couple variations of this depending on what you read, but like the gist is the same. And before Thomas even has a chance to respond, he gets shot dead through the face. So, Jesus. Yeah, like, that is it for him. And I was like, what is this? Like, the USA, what is happening here? Oof. People need to chill out with the guns. Okay. So, and I'm leaving that in there because that's an honest opinion. So the shooter was a man named Francis Smith, an excise officer, which I had to look up. I guess that means he's the guy making sure like taxes and duties get paid on goods and services. So he's like a customs officer.
Yeah.
So he's part of like one of these vigilante groups trying to find and capture the ghost. Mm-hmm. And like before we're too hard on these people, this is like a small village on the outskirts of London. And there like wasn't even an official police force for Hammersmith yet. So like, I feel like I can't be too hard on them for trying to take things into their own hands. And like, if they actually believe these stories that like whoever this is or whatever this is, like scared a woman to death and, you know, they're all really freaked out. People sure. are panicking. So like, I can give them a little bit of slack, I guess, with that. That said, a couple sources did indicate that Francis had been like having some drinks at the pub beforehand. So it's like, maybe we don't go out with our loaded gun right after that.
Yeah. It seems like the perfect time to not be great. Making those decisions.
Not great decision-making. We're here. So, I mean, like, as I think he should have been, I guess, Smith is arrested and put on trial for willful murder. He, like, fully admitted he had killed Millwood, but he did not plead guilty. Most sources say that he testified that he believed Millwood was a ghost. Like, he fully believed that, and he freaked out, and that's why he fired his gun. That's where it gets a little fuzzy because like there were a couple that suggested that like he and the others who were like part of this vigilante group knew that they weren't hunting for a ghost. Like they knew it was somebody in a costume dressing up and freaking okay. people out. And it's like that detail sort of like a lot of how I feel about this hinges on that Absolutely. Detail. And yeah. And, like, even knowing that, like, again, people are really freaked out. Like, the person doing this is, like, not, you know, not making great choices either.
Sure.
But, like, they're also not making choices that are, like, deserve them to, like, be executed publicly.
Sure.
Yes. And, like, I guess even Millwood's mother-in-law, who's the guy who got shot, and I keep switching back between first and last names, so sorry, people. But even Millwood's mother-in-law testified that she had warned him that, like, you need to wear a different coat over your white work clothes. Like, oh, especially no. when others had, like, mistaken him for the ghost already. Like, this had happened before. And, like, Thomas was like, no, this is fine. So, like, that ends up working in Smith's favor as well, because they're like, well, Thomas, you know, there's this sort of little feeling that, like, Thomas should have known better, but we're not going to victim blame here. Yeah. That said, like, again, there's this detail that, like, I'm not clear that he did believe this was a ghost. And we also know from Millwood's sister that Smith fired almost immediately. Like, he did not give Millwood a chance to identify himself or, like, call back when he started calling to him, like, who are you and what are you doing? So it's like, well, again, that's a little bit damning.
Yeah.
People do testify on Smith's behalf that after the killing happened, he was like very upset by his mistake. He surrendered to the constable immediately, and that like generally he was of good character, you know, in his everyday life. His lawyers also argue that like, yes, he was careless and reckless to have shot at what he believed was a ghost, but that there wasn't malice present. So like, he shouldn't be charged with willful murder. So we come to the jury now. So the question like his jury was like ultimately tasked with is like, is mistaking someone for a ghost a good enough defense to justify accidentally murdering them?
Can you imagine being on this jury?
No. Like, it just sounds like a nightmare. And it was like, yeah, I think as soon as I saw it, like that sort of question summed up in one of the articles I read, I was like, this is the perfect spooky true crime. Like, what if you thought you murdered a ghost? But really, it was a guy. More simply, you can frame the whole thing as like, is it murder if you generally believed you were in danger but made an honest mistake in your interpretation of the situation? Because we all know that like single cases have implications for future ones. So the jury initially returns a verdict that Smith was guilty of manslaughter, indicating that they believed his mistake in identifying Millwood as a ghost was reasonable. And that was like the rule at the time. Your conviction for willful murder could be reduced to manslaughter if you could show that you made a reasonable mistake.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And the judge is like, no fucking way to this. He tells the jury, your only options are to either acquit or to convict of murder. And he clarifies to the jury that Smith was not acting in self-defense. Like, Thomas was not in like about to attack him or anything. He's just walking down the street. That Smith went out that night intending to kill the ghost or whoever was dressed up as one. Like, he went out with a loaded gun intending to kill someone or something. And that, like I mentioned before, dressing up like a ghost wasn't a crime punishable by death, nor was it reasonable to assume that a man dressed in white was a ghost. So the judge is like, no, this is not reasonable. It's either murder or you acquit him. He sends the jury back to deliberate, telling them to disregard the supernatural aspect, and they come back with a guilty verdict for willful murder. And Smith is initially sentenced to death.
Jeez.
Which, like, I think that was like the default sentence at the time, which like is like, yikes. But the judge does like throw him a little bit of a bone because he sends the case to the king for review, and Smith's sentence ends up getting changed to a year of hard labor, which is like essentially a year of imprisonment.
That's quite the change.
It's quite the change, but like, I mean, I'm sure that year like really fucking sucked because those labor camps were not fun. Right. Yeah. So one of the other aspects that I like about this story is that like it ends up creating confusion in the British legal system for like the next almost 200 years because it sets the precedent that you can be held liable for a crime even if you made an honest mistake and had good intentions. And like that whole like, what's reasonable, what isn't, like there's obviously some gray area there. And like, if you had like an honestly held belief, like, I don't know. So the issue wasn't actually resolved until a ruling in 1984 on a case where a man named Gladstone Williams had assaulted another man, believing that man was either assaulting or robbing a young person. In reality, the man Williams attacked was just trying to detain said young person who was like actually the one who had committed some crime. So he's trying to make a citizen's arrest. And Williams like, no, fuck you. So Williams gets convicted of assault, but he appeals and he gets acquitted. And that's when it's like formally established and eventually written into law that if a person believes that force is necessary to protect themselves or to prevent a crime from being committed based on an honestly held and reasonable but mistaken belief, then they cannot have committed a crime themselves. So I think it just like, it's like a little hard for me to understand like how, what the details are. Like, is the reasonable thing the thing they get hung up on, or like, is it the, I don't know. But either way, like, they don't like write this into law and like officially close the books on this until 1984.
Wow. So, and you said this was 1803?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it like took a long time for them to figure out like, what should the rules here be if someone like makes a mistake and accidentally commits a crime? which is pretty wild. So that brings me back to Francis Smith and the murder of Thomas Millwood. So I guess first I will ask, like, Paige, what do you think? Like, do you think that he should have been found guilty of murder, or do you think it should have been manslaughter?
If manslaughter is an option, then I think I would say manslaughter. Because, like...
Yeah. But, like, manslaughter is, know, like, though. You killed somebody, but you didn't mean to kill somebody. Like, he meant to kill somebody. He meant fired to kill the gun.
Something that wasn't there to kill. Like, that's what's confusing for me. Is yeah. that, like, if it's... I'm having a hard time understanding what the purpose of the gun was. Because, right. like... You aren't, what are you going to do? We've already talked about this, but like, what are you going to do with a gun if it's a ghost? If right. he, and like, so I guess like if I were to ask him that question, it would be partially dependent on what his answer would be.
Right.
because if he legitimately thought that this gun had some power over whatever ghost he thought was there, and like he legitimately believed it was a ghost, then like, yeah. I don't necessarily think that.
That he thought murder, it was going to kill it or anything.
Yeah, that like murder is a fair.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's complicated because it's yeah. like on one hand, like, yes, he went out with a gun. He went out with a loaded, like he, that sort of implies that he's intending to shoot something. I think one source like mentioned that like he didn't intend for it to be a fatal shot. And like, I do kind of see like everybody's really riled up. Everybody's really upset. Like he just fucking panics when he sees somebody dressed in yeah. white and like makes a mistake. So like, I guess manslaughter, but it's like he shot so quickly. I don't know. I guess if you believe Smith, that he didn't intend for it to be a fatal shot. Like, but I agree with the judge that like the crimes that were committed by the ghost or like the person pretending to be the ghost, like weren't punishable by death. So like having the gun is like already unreasonable.
Yeah. I mean, that's and,
like,
fair.
Yeah. So if he's out there with like a weapon of deadly force and he thinks he's looking for a person dressed up as a ghost, like, I don't know. I think that's murder if he kills somebody.
I think the other part of this, too, is that, like, I don't remember when you mentioned it, but, like, yeah. even in this, like, let's pretend that this actually is a ghost for a second. Yeah. Even if it were, like, the ghost isn't doing anything in that moment to hurt him. And so like right. the whole rule there, right, is that like you're not supposed to use deadly force unless like you're
yeah unless you yeah like there's nothing that like the whatever the ghost the person is just like walking down the street.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's like maybe chill the fuck out. But like yeah. So that said though, if we believe that he thought Millwood was actually a ghost, and we know that everyone's really freaked out. We know that people potentially believe that this, like, ghost has scared women to death. And, like, everybody's panicking and they want this to stop. I guess that, like, downgrading to manslaughter probably yeah. would have been the right decision. I don't know. But, like, manslaughter feels more appropriate for, like, he shot at a ghost and, like, accidentally hit somebody else. Like, if you shoot a gun at something, like, you're trying to kill that thing.
I mean, unless in his mind he knows shooting a ghost isn't going to do anything but thinks it might scare the ghost. I don't know. I just, like,
it's complicated.
For me, I feel like I would have to understand what he thought having a gun was going to do to that ghost.
Yeah. 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 And, like, ultimately, I think what ended up happening to him, like, probably I kind of feel like, well, it, you know, it works out either way, because like he deserved some punishment sure. for like what he did,
but, I certainly like, don't think death
yeah he didn't deserve to get executed, so like yeah, like he deserved to be put on trial, and I think like, you know, giving him some imprisonment time was like a viable option. So it kind of seems like they like convicted him of murder but gave him like the manslaughter punishment. Yeah. treatment, yeah. you know? So I don't know. So it's complicated though. And like, yeah. And you asked earlier, you were like, oh, you know, do people really believe this was a ghost? And it's like, gosh, to me, it seems so silly. It seems so obvious. Like, this is just a person
right.
well, running around being an asshole. But like at the time, people really believed in ghosts. So like, I don't know.
So then my next question is like, okay, so now he has been sentenced and we know that Millwood was not a ghost. Like, what happened to the person who was pretending to be the ghost?
Oh, yeah. So that's where we are.
Oh, are you actually going to talk about that?
Yeah. So here's the other twist to the story.
Okay.
Is that a couple days after the shooting, another local man named John Graham, who's like an elderly guy, he's like feeling really guilty and he confessed to being the Hammersmith ghost.
Oh, no.
So it's a little unclear if he was always the ghost. Like some sources say that like he only accounted for like one of the sightings or one of the occasions. And like one other thing was like, oh, he thought it was fun the one time, so he did it a bunch of other times. But like, this is kind of like an old dude. I don't know. Like, it's like why I mentioned earlier that there may have been copycats or like other people fucking sure. around here. Yeah, but he confesses and he says that he went out dressed as a ghost to get revenge on some apprentices of his who scared his children with ghost stories. So he's just like a dad who's like,
oh, that's kind of sweet.
I'm going to scare the shit out of you for scaring the shit out of my kids.
Oh.
I'm sure he felt so bad. yeah, and that's the thing. I think he like maybe got like a slap on the wrist or like they told him like, you got to stop doing this for sure. But like, it doesn't seem like anything really happened to him. Like no formal charges or punishments were issued. Like it just, the issue got dropped after that. It's a little bit of a funny detail that it's like, it was just this dude who was like, fuck you.
Oh.
For scaring my kids.
Poor John Graham.
Poor John Graham. I know. But like, maybe not poor John Graham, because like, if he had done it more than once and he was like physically assaulting people,
yeah,
like,
fair enough.
Maybe not. But if it was just like one time, then yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And then of course the final detail here is that like, I don't know, in the irony of ironies, the man who was mistaken for the Hammersmith ghost, Thomas Millwood, now has become the Hammersmith ghost because it's reported that he haunts the Black Lion Inn, which is where his body was taken to be examined after he was killed.
Gosh.
I like love that story so much.
it's like sort of a mind fuck.
Yeah. I want to see the movie of the Hammersmith ghost. No, I mean like I want there to be a movie.
Oh, okay.
I think it would be a good movie.
Well, I'm just thinking like, okay, so like let's play this out for a second where this happened to the clown people.
Yeah, right.
You know, right. like.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, like, I guess the difference is that we all know that those were people. Like, it's not like clowns. Like, clowns are just people. So it's a.
Clowns are people too, Paige.
It's not like there's any question on whether or not there was a person under that suit. But like.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Like, I don't want to say that by dressing up as a clown and like staring into people's windows and like being scary that you deserve to be shot. Like, I certainly don't believe that. But like, at some point, you're sort of asking for trouble, right?
Right.
So.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think even I don't want to victim blame because like even the judge in the case, I think, says something about like, forget the ghost aspect. Like, imagine this was like a highway robber or something like that. Or like, it was just someone trying to like burgle somebody. Like, if you shoot them because believe that like they're, you know, they're committing some crime or like you believe that they're guilty of some crime, like you've still killed this person and like you've done it on purpose. Like that's murder.
I just wonder like what this I like wonder if that had happened, like if somebody had gotten seriously hurt because of the whole clown thing, how
yeah,
like, a jury would have handled that. Because like that sort of I'm like kind of comparing the two.
I guess like the difference is like I think laws are different in the US. Yeah, like there are way more like stand your ground laws and stuff.
Yeah,
and, like,
that's
way,
fair.
Yeah, like way more protections for people. But I guess like these are all in public property. Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah, I guess they are different in that way. Fair enough. All right. Well, that wraps up our first spooky true crime episode of 2023. Join Megan, Tyson, and Jeremy next time for an episode on Appalachian folklore. If you like this episode, hit subscribe and share with a friend. Check the show notes for links to all of our social media accounts, our Discord server, and Patreon. If you have any questions about previous topics or ideas for future episodes, email us at spookyscientesisters@gmail.com. As always, thank you for listening and stay spooky. Spooky Science Sisters is a proud member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network. For more information or to check out other shows, please visit evergreenpodcasts.com.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.